keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo. We have a broadcast for you today. We've put together, you know, we know you can't listen to every single show. And sometimes we've got to be in meetings too. We don't have anybody from the team ready to host live, but we want to update you on case you may have missed, stories you may have missed, work that the ACLJ is doing. And we're very recent work. Like if you missed a show last week or a show even yesterday, to make sure you know what we're up to and, of course, the issues of the day, Logan.
Yep, and we're going to pack it full of guests today. A lot of great ones coming up. So just coming up in the next segment of Andy Economo, we're talking about sort of the Hunter Biden gun charge and everything that went down there. Yep. So if you want to be informed, what's really great about these shows, you're going to learn about a lot of topics quickly. Great thing to have if you're going to a dinner party. You'll have stuff ready to spew at people. If they come at you, you're like, I got the facts. I heard about it on Seculo. So that's going to be what's coming up next, followed by then Jeff Balaban. We're going to talk to him about Israel, their relationship with Saudi Arabia, and how that's kind of been a bit in the flux.
He's our director of our office in Israel.
That's right. So those two are going to be coming in the first half hour alone. But it's also important to tell you about the ongoing work of the ACLJ. There is a reason that we are not live right now, and we can't necessarily say what those reasons always are.
If you're watching us.
What?
There's a different background.
Oh, yeah. And we're coming off of doing the Secular Brothers podcast, which if you haven't watched or listened to the Secular Brothers podcast, it's a lot of fun. It's a bit more of a chill experience. This last show we just did that came out yesterday, we talked a lot about the Hollywood strike, some of the cracks that are happening right now, how that's going to change the entertainment industry, how it's going to change the content you're going to get, even as a media consumer, even a conservative media consumer, what that all means in the coming months. We talk about that. We also talk about a lot of different topics, college football, the history of professional wrestling, and Tyrus, as you said, who was on Fox News. He just retired from his work in Smashing Pumpkins. We talk a lot of things. That's on Secular Brothers Podcast. You can find that on all your favorite podcast apps. You can find that on YouTube and on Rumble. We encourage you to subscribe on all those places and tell your friends about it. Again, it's a good supplement to this show. Watch the Secular broadcast. Then later on, check out Secular Brothers because it is a little bit more relaxing, a little more pop culture, what's going on in sports, what's going on in media. Kind of dive into some of more our expertise, a little bit different than just what you hear on here, which is a lot of hard-hitting information, news, a lot more chill, a lot more fun. So make sure you take a listen to the Secular Brothers podcast, as well as all the great content, by the way, coming out of the ACLJ. You need to go to aclj.org and play around. I've always said that. We encourage you to go there and support and to donate, but you can watch and listen and read incredible content, whether that's talking about the current case we have with Charlie Kirk and Turning Point USA, which has become, Jordan, a pretty big a big talking point in the media.
Yeah, that's right, because this is going to be a challenge by organization and individually Charlie Kirk and his social media, and how it was basically shadow banned, dethrottled, not able, sometimes even banned from your own account because you put out content that the government went to social media companies right. And said to ban. It's not like people at Facebook are experts at what was right about COVID or what was wrong or election issues or I mean, so many topics, the Hunter Biden laptop.
Yeah. Well, I've said this a million times now. I don't care if you like the positions or you don't like the positions. I think all of us should be rallying around the idea that you have the right to have those positions and talk about it and it actually be seen if you have an audience. That's also the crazy part. It's not like it wasn't being fed to everyone. A lot of that content wasn't even being fed to the people that said, I want this content.
Yeah, to your own subscribers. So people have taken the extra step, as we ask people to do all the time. Subscribe to our page. Follow our page. You get more info. And a lot of times, especially the last election cycle and surrounding it, they would just stop serving it to people.
Yeah.
The people who said, I want it.
So we're going to discuss that as long as, again, we have other guests coming up. Rick Grinnell will be joining later. Marsha Blackburn will be joining us later in the broadcast. It is a packed show the next hour. So if you didn't see any of those or you need a refresher, we're going to keep going. We'll also be back at the top of the or the bottom of the hour with another new segment. So we'll be talking about what's coming up in the second half hour. Stay tuned. Again, following in this one, we're going to discuss the Hunter Biden indictment over the gun charges, what it all means. Again, great factoids, great information that you can take into your life. Support the work of the ACLJ. Go to aclj.org right now. Again, there's a reason that we are not doing a full show for you right now. It's a very important reason you'll know about it soon. Go to aclj.org. But don't worry, tomorrow we'll be back fully live. We'll be right back with more on Seculo.
Secular. We are taking your phone calls to 1-800-684-3110. Other story that broke, not just the 14th Amendment, but all of a sudden now the special counsel, David Weiss out of Delaware, says to expect an indictment of Hunter Biden before September 29th. There was questions about exactly what that indictment will be, and now it looks like it's specific to the firearm charge, which was one of the lesser, I mean, it's a serious charge, but one of the lesser charges when you have tax evasion charges that were potentially hanging out there. We haven't really gotten word or clarity on those yet, but we have gotten clarity in a memo that was, I guess, this court filing that was filed that he's reconvening he's going to seek a grand jury to issue this indictment. He doesn't have it yet.
I never heard of it. That's why we got Andy O'Connell in here, our senior counsel, and who's a former prosecutor. I've never heard of this announcing I'm seeking, but I haven't gotten yet. What is going on here?
Well, that's a good question. I think we'd all like to know what's going on here. I think the court would like to know. I think the people would like to know. You don't have a situation ever that I know of in which a prosecutor says, I'm going to indict, and I'm going to indict by September 29th. Because that's what he said in a status report to Judge Noriega. I'm going to indict by September 29th at the earliest, because that's when the Speedy Trial Act requires me to do that. And that no action is required by the court. Well, the problem that I have with that is, who are you? You're the United States attorney. You're the attorney for the grand jury. You certainly have the right to sign the indictment, but the determination of whether or not there is going to be the return of an indictment, that is to say, probable cause to find that a crime has been committed, is with the grand jury, not with the prosecutor. You don't control the grand jury.
Why did he do it?
Because he obviously doesn't know what he's doing. That's what my opinion is. You don't make an announcement that I'm going to indict somebody. You say I'm going to present evidence to the grand jury asking for the return of an indictment.
They're saying they expect an indictment before September 29. Correct. Hunter Biden lawyers have argued the prosecutors are barred from filing additional charges under an agreement the two sides previously reached on the gun case. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic.
I can see the defense lawyers saying that we have already agreed that you can't indict on the gun charge, and they're going to probably file the charge, a motion to dismiss that if Weiss indicts or the grand jury indicts on the gun charge. I can see that coming from Abby Lowell.
Yes, our friend, I need to say this, Abby Lowell, and he is a friend of mine and a friend of Andy's. He's worked with him very closely in representing President Trump. He represented Jared and Ivanka's, probably, I'd say, leading top three criminal defense lawyers in the United States, and I put him number one on the list. He's a fantastic lawyer. He said, we expect a fair resolution of the sprawling five-year investigation into Mr. Biden that was based on the evidence and the law, not outside political pressure, and we'll do what is necessary on behalf of Mr. Biden to achieve just that. Let me tell you something about Abby, and you know him too, Jordan. He doesn't just say things. He's got a plan on, if they do this, that he's going to go after it.
Yeah, I think even like Andy McCarthy said, this seems very bizarre. Don't think this is like a reawakening of David Weiss, or that he's doing this for the right reasons. Really was forced into doing this by a court. It looks like those tax charges have disappeared. They've been dismissed as of now.
Yeah.
So they have to bring those again, which brings up statute of limitations issue, which of course the defense would argue. And again, that failed plea deal was a big failure by the federal government. It wasn't just a tough move on the Hunter Biden team, but also put the special counsel, because of this way too long of an investigation into basic tax. You didn't pay your taxes. They knew the amount. They knew the amount that he had paid back. And you filed to get a gun while you told everyone you were a drug addict. So very basic.
Yeah, but
like Andy McCarthy says, you could have gotten these indictments in a day years ago.
I want to read what Andy said, Andy McCarthy said, who's also a good friend of ours. Never forget they think we're idiots. I mean, this is what he wrote. That's the main takeaway from Wednesday's announcement by the faux special counsel. These are his words, David Weiss, that by month's end, he intends to indict Hunter Biden on a felony gun charge, the very same gun charge Weiss tried to make disappear just 6 weeks ago. David Weiss's team in court said, yes, we believe this is a fair and full, Andy, resolution of the charge.
Yeah, and then he turns around and says, I'm going to indict him on the gun charge. First of all, you're not the grand jury. But where was he with a gun charge 5 years ago? How hard is it to indict or to get the grand jury to indict on a gun charge? All it is filling out a federal form under Section 922 of Title 18, which says I'm a drug user, and if you do, you can't have a gun. I could have indicted that in 3 days and have indicted gun charges before. It's not a complicated case.
Here's what McCarthy says. After 5 years, the Hunter gun case should be easily easiest, should be the easiest grand jury presentation, a one-paragraph indictment in the annals of American prosecutions. Why is Weiss still talking about indicting the case when he could have easily indicted the case 5 years ago? If he had just spent a half hour in the grand jury and gotten the simple indictment, he wouldn't have had to tell Judge Noriega anything on Wednesday. The felony charge would have spoken for itself. The statute of limitations would no longer be an issue. They could have just set a trial date, but they did not.
Well, that's exactly what I said. You know, the, one of the easiest charges to prove is a gun charge, a felon in possession of a firearm, or a drug user in possession of a firearm. Biden said to everybody that he was a drug user. He neglected to fill out a form that said that, and yet he had possession of a firearm. This is an easy thing to do. You call the ATF agent or the FBI agent in, you show him the documents, or you ask him if there are documents, you ask him what the evidence is that he was a drug user, you present evidence that he had a gun or that he said that he had a gun, and then you walk out and you give the grand jury the indictment.
So
10 minutes.
I think where people are is that they usually, it seems like a charge like this, which is a fairly simple one, would be part of a much larger, like a tax, like, you know, multiple, you're getting hit with multiple counts. Is this even worth bringing a single charge like this? I mean, how serious? Yes, it's a felony, but they tried to settle this out.
I would never have added this charge except to a longer indictment with evasion so that the jury could compromise on a charge if they wanted to. Right. It's what we call a throwaway charge, but it should have been in there.
You hear what he just said, everybody?
That's what it feels like.
Say that again.
It's a throwaway charge is what it is. It's not the substantive guts of the investigation. I would have indicted it, had the grand jury indicted on that, it provided that I had also had tax evasion and all the other dealings so that they, if they wanted to, could compromise on the gun charge or throw it out or say we're going to give him something by not finding him guilty on the gun charge.
Yep.
But that's how you do prosecution. He doesn't know what he's doing.
The whole issue with these prosecutors running around, it has kind of made a joke of our entire legal system.
Gosh.
Because it seems like whether it's the courts, the judges, federal, state, the prosecutors themselves, both at federal and state level, these are long-term prosecutors, people with a lot of experience, and it's like they've never done a case before. Now, many of them, they've done cases, but they just haven't done cases against Trumps or Bidens. And
yeah,
they haven't
right.
been up against this kind of defense.
Well, I mean, it is a unique situation where you have both the former president of the United States under a multi-jurisdictional indictments for, and you've got the current sitting president of the United States who has a special counsel investigating him and a special counsel investigating his son. So what do you do in a situation like this?
If you're the prosecutor?
Yes.
You go ahead with the evidence. This is what Weiss's problem is. You had this ton and mountain of evidence that you've accumulated on tax evasion charges. Then you had a gun charge that you could throw in. You indict. You go to the grand jury and you say, here's my evidence. You present the indictment and ask for the return of an indictment. It's very simple. You put the gun charge in as a compromise charge so that the grand jury can either say, I'm going to no-bill this, or a trial jury, if you do true bill it, can say, I'm going to throw away the charge. But you do. You act. You don't wait till the statute of limitations has almost run and then give this memo to the district judge saying I'm going to indict by September 29th.
Have because- you ever seen that?
No, never. Never have seen that.
You were prosecutor.
I was a prosecutor 3 years in 9 years as an assistant district attorney and 5 years as an assistant United States attorney. I know my prosecution pretty good.
This is like they're making this stuff up as they go along.
That's what it seems like to people. I think to both sides. I was on a show earlier today, conservative host, and we said, you know, this is what we've been arguing against with President Trump, too. Is it you wait too long? We don't think that you start bringing these charges against elected officials or their direct relatives because it appears like election influence. It does look like, I mean, I'll be honest on it. David Weiss did not have some come to Jesus moment where he decided, you know, Hunter Biden, this Ukrainian deal is something I need to reinvestigate.
No.
That has nothing
this
to do with this.
This is all politics.
He got pressure because the judge threw out the plea deal. And
yes.
he had no charges and they got to have something with Hunter Biden. Because they got to have something that they can close this out with.
Prediction, 60 days they come up with a plea agreement. Andy, that's what I think.
It's possible. With Abby Lowell, you don't play games because he's a serious defense lawyer, and he's going to find the holes in the case, and there's plenty of them.
Exactly right. All right. Thank you, Andy. We've got a legal memo that we have prepared on this 14th Amendment challenge. We're going to get into that in the next segment of the broadcast. We are sending a letter to all 50 secretaries of state, and you've represented secretaries of state.
I do.
This idea of suing them, which is what this group did in Colorado, to keep Trump off the ballot is You're shaking your head. It's a gutsy move.
It's a very gutsy move, but I don't think one that it's going to be successful based on the memorandum that I've read and the experience that I have. I really don't.
So we're preparing a legal memorandum. We're going to be sending a letter to all 50 states, secretary of states, and probably election supervisors too. But we're going to file an amicus brief in that Colorado case. But we need you to stand with us. Jordan's going to let you know how, folks. I really want 100,000 signatures. I know it's a lot for a month of, you know, September. It's not typically a huge month. But if we can get 100,000 signatures on this guy, it's growing since we've been on air.
Yeah, I've added a couple thousand since we've been on the air. So go to ACLJ.org, sign that petition today, and listen. We don't live in a time where even there's common sense with the law. So even a straightforward analysis that shows something is wrong and that bringing these charges is wrong, you can't just accept that that's going to be accepted these days. You have to be ready to fight back on all this to make sure your vote is counted. Go to ACLJ.org. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Secio. We are taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. We can take one more call on Biden and the situation there before we go to Israel and our office in Israel. Terry in Oklahoma, online too. Hey, Terry.
Hey, gentlemen. I have a quick question about if there are any constitutional provisions or maybe a legal process in the event, say, that Biden were nominated by his party next year, and they've already had the convention, and that he is either incapacitated, say through stroke or something like that, or he passes away before the election.
So the Democrats have a super priority situation, a super delegate situation. So those delegates can then reapportion, or the party itself could reapportion and appoint an individual. They're not going to let it go unfulfilled.
Yeah, I think that would go to the provision in, again, the presidential line of succession that you still...
But that's if... And then, right, the vice president would become the president.
He'll still be there.
Right, so it's not like that one happened, but there is a process there, yes. All right, we're taking more calls when we come back, 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Jeff Balaban in Jerusalem, as you can see in the background there. Beautiful background of a... It looks like a nice... Almost fall day in Jerusalem. Jeff, there is a lot of talk about Saudi Arabia, which we thought, if Trump was going to be in for another term, would have signed on to the Abraham Accords. What's the latest between, first of all, what's the relations like right now between Saudi Arabia and Israel?
You know, there's a lot of obvious need here to protect the stability of the region, which the Abraham Accords launched into the stratosphere. And Saudi Arabia is tremendously concerned. And Saudi is an American ally, even if we don't necessarily share values. It's a strategic ally. And specifically, they're concerned about Iran. And Iran wants to have hegemony over this area. And Saudi, therefore, along with Egypt and Jordan, help with America and now increasingly Israel. So Israel and Saudi, their relationship has always been sort of behind closed doors, very useful, if not friendly. Now it's getting even warmer than it was before. Saudi Arabia is allowing Israeli airlines to fly over Saudi airspace, which never used to happen. And although Saudis are not fully part of the Abraham Accords, there seem to be suggestions that might get closer towards that.
You know, what's interesting to me, Jeff, when I was reading through this, it was something I kind of missed too, is that over the past few years, the Saudi government has stopped funding the Palestinian Authority. And so, and I would imagine they were one of the larger funders of the Palestinian Authority, but they stopped funding them because they said that, you know, the Palestinians were, they're frustrated at the fact that they had no gratitude, that they were pocketing the money, like we've talked about, that so many billionaires being made over the Palestinian Authority and the PA, instead of actually getting things accomplished. I mean, I think that's pretty shocking for a lot of people to hear that the Saudis had already given up on funding the Palestinians directly.
I think people are surprised. You know, one of the great insights that led to the Abraham Accords' vast success in normalization and even warm peace with major American allies in the region is that they recognize that, you know, the notion of a separate Palestinian state, as apart from, let's say, the state of Jordan, which is ethnically the same as the Arab population here in Israel. In fact, the land of Israel was divided and Jordan was given 80% of it. And so now these people the Palestinian Authority are trying to grab more and more. And in fact, they've declared openly they want the end of the state of Israel. So they don't really want peace. And the and frankly, other countries here, like Saudi Arabia, are sick of it. They're sick. They're done with it. They don't want to see it anymore. They do have to worry about their street, meaning they're still popular in the Saudi street. But the ruling class understands that for purposes of stability, which is America's interest in this region, it's better to deal with the Israelis. And they're really not interested anymore directly in helping the Palestinians achieve their own state. They would like to see the Palestinians have better lives, but they recognize better lives actually means that Israel has sovereignty, not that a new state be created.
You know, Jeff, one of the things, and we've done work, you and I have done work over there now for, I'm trying to think, my goodness, what have you been doing this probably 15 years, more longer than that, probably 20 years. We negotiated some of the deals that we did for the intergovernmental stuff. And you look at the situation now where Bibi Netanyahu, they were saying he would take his government down in order to get the Saudis to the table. Now he said he's not going to have to do that to get it there. Do you think it is possible that we see Saudi Arabia as part of the Abraham Accords in the next 4 to 6 months? And will the Biden administration allow that to happen?
So that is the ultimate question, Jay, which is to say, I believe, I'm concerned that the Biden administration will not allow it to happen without some major concessions to the idea of the creation of a Palestinian state or giving the Palestinian Authority even greater and greater ability to claim to be a state on the international front, which is actually completely contrary to the interests of peace, of security, of Israel's interests. And as Israel has come more and more to regret Oslo and regret the idea of allowing the Palestinian, remember the PLO, the Palestinian Authority is just the new name, the new face of the PLO, yeah, the notorious terrorist group, and allowing them to claim territory. You know, there is no legal, historical, or moral background for the idea of creating yet another state here in the Jewish heartland.
Yeah, hey, Jeff, for people that are watching this show, because it's the first time we've used this show outside the area there, what are they looking at?
So yeah, I'm sitting right now. This is on the porch of overlooking the old city of Jerusalem. So these are the walls that you see behind me of the old city of Jerusalem. Off in the distance, you might see some small towers, actually. Yeah. That's David's Citadel off in the distance. But we are right behind me is a valley. As you know, Jerusalem is a series of hills.
Right.
It's the valley, and right past it, that is the old city walls of Jerusalem. This is the center of the biblical heartland.
Yeah, which is the center of the world. It's a great shot, and I think it helps people understand. We should probably do in the next couple of years one of our trips to Israel. We haven't done that in a decade. Maybe in a year or two we'll do that. Jeff, last question here, and that is this. You know, we've done a lot of work at the International Criminal Court in The Hague on behalf of Israel, on behalf of the United States, too. The UN, we just filed at the UN, the human rights reports from Israel, which we gave a high grade to. But we need to expect, I think, and our audience needs to be prepared that there's going to be, will be the positive, but there's going to be a lot of negatives.
100%. Look, there's no question anyone involved in this, and we are heavily involved in this, knows that the United Nations is not Israel's friend, that the United Nations, frankly, and we've talked about this openly, does many things that are clearly anti-Semitic. And yes, the involvement of the UN in all of this tends to be to create a record, a global record that chastises Israel as the worst wrongdoer in the world, which is, it's so beyond absurd, Jay. Israel is a beacon of liberalism, of peace, of humanity, of tolerance, of democracy, and they're doing their best to try and make it out to be evil. And so it's so vitally important that what you're talking about, ACLJ does, it steps into the middle, represents the interests of the United States of America with their great ally Israel, and really in a way that almost nobody else does, and nobody can do it in the way ACLJ does it.
We appreciate it. Jeff, coming from our office in Jerusalem, beautiful backdrop behind you. First time we've used that shot. It looks great. Folks, folks, we've got an email going out today on our whistleblowers. We just filed a major lawsuit against the deep state. We've got the whistleblower issue that's going on right now, which is putting us in federal court for them in the Court of Appeals. That's how that starts. Your support of the ACLJ makes sure our office in Jerusalem is operating so we can defend the state of Israel, but also defend these whistleblowers here in the United States. Jordan's going to let you know how you can support our work. It's critical that you do that. And if you're not getting our emails, make sure you do.
That's right. Go to ACLJ.org. You can donate there. You can sign up to be on the ACLJ list. It's a great place to be informed about all the work that we are doing. Of course, we talk about as much as we can on the broadcast, but we don't have time every day to talk about all the work that we're doing. So go to ACLJ.org, support us financially if you can, but sign up to make sure you're in the know about what we're doing at ACLJ.org.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo, special broadcast day. If you're watching the broadcast, you're seeing a different background.
Seculo Brothers
background. What's this SB behind me?
Check us out, Seculo Brothers Podcast, which we do multiple times a week over on secularbrothers.com, or you can find it on Rumble, you can find it on YouTube, you can find it on Apple Podcasts.
There's a door behind you. Where does it go? I don't know.
You'll never know where that door goes to. One day someone will knock, it'll be like Mr. Rogers, they'll open the door.
Oh, we're going to like...
And like, hello, Mr. McFeely. And it's just the next step. But no, we've got a... I hope you enjoyed the first half hour. We got a packed second half hour coming up too. Rick Grinnell's going to be joining us in the next segment. And then Senator Marsha Blackburn from the state of Tennessee, from our district. She's going to be joining us as well.
Our state.
I'm sorry. What did I say? District.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. States. I meant from where I live. I vote for her.
You're in Tennessee.
Yes. She is on my ballot.
She's on your ballot wherever you are in Tennessee.
You know, the things you learn.
Oh, that's not great.
Logan. That was a joke. I was kidding.
Logan knows where your messenger is.
Yes, I do.
Every state has
a couple of them.
That's right.
At least two.
They get elected for?
Sometimes more.
No, never more.
Two, never more than two.
How long, like, they get elected? Sith. How long they get elected for?
A master and an apprentice.
You don't want to know. Accident.
How many years?
Yeah.
Four? Two? No,
they're special.
Eight?
Six.
Six. Yeah, no. I feel like I voted for her a lot since I've lived here.
Probably only once.
I've lived here for 20 years.
So twice.
Yeah. She's been around, though. That name is...
She was the House person.
Yeah. And she's like a Tennessee legend. Like, she was a... I think she was a Miss Tennessee at one point. I think, or something like that.
Really?
I believe so. I believe her history is that. One of our... one of the people I know, she was her pageant coach. So that was one of her... No, I don't think I'm wrong. She was definitely, though, involved in that. But I don't know if she was actually Miss Tennessee. But she should be.
In my mind, I consider her
Miss Tennessee.
Yeah.
So joining us next, there'll be Rick Grinnell on a very interesting topic.
Yes, which is how Chinese nationals posing as tourists to get closer to our military bases.
I mean, probably the least shocking and at the same time, it feels like a movie.
Yes. I think we're just getting a lot more info than we ever used to about how we're getting spied on. It's like a lot of it's so obvious, and I guess it's just tougher for them to crack down on because, you know, they were technically here with an illegal visa. That means they weren't there. They weren't real tourists. At the same time, I don't feel like since COVID, there's a lot of back and forth travel happening between China and the U.S.?
I think every day.
Well, I know that there's people that do because of the business and things like that, but like tourism-wise,
gotcha.
It seems a little bit suspicious.
Yeah, maybe so.
And just because of the state of the economy and the state of the world and the state of the relationship between the two countries.
But we're going to talk about that with Rick Grinnell coming up. You also should look at his great content that's at ACLJ.org. And great content right now that also is coming out of ACLJ Action. I think that's something we got a couple minutes here. You should tell people about what's going on with ACLJ Action. I know that we talk about it from time to time on the show, but it's a sister kind of project of the ACLJ.
Yeah. So if you go to ACLJAction.org, it's our C4 organization run out of Washington, D.C., and it's doing a lot of direct contact work with legislators, both at the federal level and state. And it's not the ACLJ wasn't doing that before, but this is, again, it comprises a more dedicated team to get inside Congress. Some of the nitty-gritty, a word change here, a word change there, because that very much matters in law and when laws and legislation are being passed. So we wanted to make sure we had a big enough team ready to be in there. When rules are put forward, that's one thing we're working right now, is this HHS rule that basically forces any institution to pay for abortions.
Right.
And kind of going back on all the victories we've seen, the Hobby Lobby case and others, you see how they're not going to stop. So this time around, they're not using the regular legislative process. They're using a rulemaking process. So we educate people and they can speak out. We have a lot of activism tools there.
Yep. And that is at ACLJAction.org. Take a look at that right now. Obviously coming up, Rick Grinnell, followed by Senator Marsha Blackburn. And I did want to say, to clarify, because I found out my facts, because she's actually from Mississippi originally. She was not Miss Mississippi, but she was the queen of the oil festival, which qualified her for Miss Mississippi and the Miss America, like, pageant circuit. So I knew there was something.
Yeah.
She'll be joining us. Not talking about that. Not talking about that. We'll discuss that later on. But again, visit ACLJ.org. Get all the great information there. Check out the videos. Check out the great content. Amazing articles. And we'll be back with more coming up. Again, Rick Grinnell's next. Marsha Blackburn to wrap us up. And we'll be back tomorrow live.
To Secular, take your calls to 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. They're called Chinese gate crashers at U.S. bases, sparking espionage concern. This report in the Wall Street Journal that the incidents range from Chinese nationals found crossing into a U.S. missile range in New Mexico to what appeared to be scuba divers swimming in murky waters near a U.S. government rocket launch site in Florida. Let me tell you what you will not usually see. Is scuba divers in murky waters in Florida that are usually inhabited by other creatures that can be fairly dangerous to those scuba divers unless they are there for some sort of mission. You are not accidentally diving in those areas near missile bases. You're not accidentally trying to cross into U.S. missile ranges in New Mexico. But what is also concerning about this, I want to go to Rick Grinnell right off the top, is that, Rick, we are hearing that these individuals who are being caught are actually being forced into this, that they are Chinese nationals here in America that are then being pressured by the Chinese government. They might not be actual full-time spies, but pressured into the Chinese government to carry out these missions or else, and then they threaten them with something. And I think that's horrible for Chinese Americans that are here because it sets a bad tone that we should be suspicious of all Chinese Americans. But also it's the reality is that China is doing this to Chinese Americans.
Well, look, many of these individuals are illegally in the country. And so there is a difference between celebrating the contributions of immigrants to this country, legal immigrants, people who waited in line and did the right thing, and then those who are illegally here and here for nefarious reasons. Now, look, I have to be careful how I talk about this particular subject because we are getting into an area that is rift with sources and methods. But let me just say this because it was publicly talked about. When I was acting director of national intelligence, we had to, with the FBI, give local, state, and federal politicians what we call defensive briefings. Where we would go to them and say, the person that you're talking to, the person that you are doing some sort of activity with, is a communist Chinese spy, and you've been duped. And many times, these individuals who were local politicians or federal politicians
yep.
had no idea what was happening. But make no mistake, the Chinese strategy is to get unwitting people.
But it's interesting here, you got these are nationals. I mean, these are people that have come to the United States. Andy, the Department of Justice, and you were a U.S. attorney, you were in charge of the criminal division for Atlanta, big office, has a whole division under their national security apparatus department that deals with espionage.
That's right.
And you would think they would be right on top of this because this is a real threat to the United States.
Well, if you go to the website, you see a statement by Director Chris Wray in which he says, this is our top priority right now is counterintelligence and espionage situations. But that doesn't seem to be what in practice the main focus of the FBI is. It's attacking conservatives. Pregnancy resource centers are not being protected, making raids on Mar-a-Lago to see whether documents are there that should have been in the archives.
Being reviewed, right.
Churches being reviewed and monitored to see whether their religious doctrine is okay or whether they're maybe too orthodox in their statements. So the FBI is the lead agency in this counter-espionage movement in the United States, and they're not doing their job. The Nationals say they've lost their way. They said they were looking for a Burger King or a McDonald's or a hotel, and they end up, as Jordan said, scuba diving in Key West or at the White Sands Proving Ground in New Mexico. And so the base penetrations are a growing and concerning trend in the U.S. military, and the FBI should be doing their job. My estimation is they're not.
Mm. Rick, one of those issues, too, I want to go to as well is North Korea. We saw unprecedented moves under the Trump administration
trying to build some dialogue there and a back and forth exchange to really kind of cool off the threats and the rocket launches and the attempts by North Koreans. But now we're seeing a total reversal where the North Koreans are thinking about actually going to and bringing Kim Jong-un to Russia, which is quite a move in itself. Right. Yeah. And we know that the North Koreans have been providing weapons to Russia in exchange for Russia providing goods and like food stamps, things like that to the North Koreans. But it just kind of shows people how quickly things can change when a foreign policy goes bad.
Well, look, Donald Trump's diplomacy was all about keeping enemies in dialogue so that they weren't working with our other enemies to come up with nuclear weapons and attack us. Remember, North Korea is testing their nuclear weapons. We know they have some, and they're trying to miniaturize it and get it on the head of a ballistic missile that will travel a long way and explode somewhere. We know that they have technology and testing that is getting very close to a concern for the west coast of the United States. Some believe it's even able to reach the east coast at this point if they could get all the pieces together. So we have to be very careful with North Korea. My concern with the Biden administration is that you literally can't find a part of the world that is doing better under Joe Biden these last 2.5 years. Pick a part of the world, any part, any region, and we have dialed back. We've become less safe, less secure, and our enemies are starting to organize together against us.
You want to go to the phones, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Virginia calling from Georgia on line one. Hey, Virginia.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Great.
Fine. I'm 80 years old. I've been a proud Georgian for 71 years.
Yes.
For the first time in my life, I'm ashamed of Georgia. I've enjoyed hearing Newt and the other gentlemen. Excellent replies. Please have a good day.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah, we are. Look, I know a lot of people in Georgia. I mean, I spent a lot of my years in Georgia. Andy's in Georgia. I mean, Jordan was born in Georgia, and we've got a lot going back. This DA's case, Andy, has got a lot of people because it's unprecedented.
Virginia, I'm a Georgian, too, and I'm very sorry that we have the situation that we have in Fulton County. You've got a district attorney right here who's out of control. You've got a district attorney who says if you disagree with an election and you contest it, you're a racketeer. Now, is the president of the United States, Donald Trump, a racketeer, really? Is Rudy Giuliani, who was deputy attorney general, a racketeer? Is Mark Meadows, who was chief of staff for President Trump, a racketeer, or any of these other 18 people who were on alternate slate or electors, just like was promulgated in Hawaii when Nixon and Kennedy were running? I mean, is this really what we need to be doing in the state of Georgia?
But they are.
What about murders and prosecutions for criminal acts in Fulton County? What about those?
Yeah, so the question, Rick, on the political side of this, and we talked to the president last week on the broadcast, and you're talking to him every day as well, is this portion of it, certainly for the primaries, it seems to be solidifying the report. So the indictments did not hurt him politically. What about a conviction if it was before the election?
I mean, look, you guys are the legal experts. What I'm reading and what I'm being told is that there's just no possible way that we're going to get to a trial before the election. But let's just say that we do. I think that everything that the Democrats are doing to weaponize the justice system against Donald Trump is really beginning to tell the message for us. We are seeing independents say that they've had enough. This is now with 91 charges against the president. It's too much. They've overplayed it, and people see it.
I think Rick's right.
Yeah, I disagree. I think that, again, that the left, the dream is now, they thought it was going to be indictments. That again, did not score what they thought it would. They thought the mugshot, that didn't score. That backfires us, too. And then so now they're going to rush to try to get a conviction. It's very hard to see on paper how that happens. I mean, you could see how some of these start, potentially, but actually getting to an end game, after all the motions you can go through, after all the issues that arise, just for President Trump, we're not talking about the other people involved in these cases, but just because you're talking about a president, I mean, there's so many different issues that could be appealed. Some that could be appealed multiple times.
Yeah, final order, I agree with Rick. Not likely, Andy.
That's true. I agree. And let me tell you, if there's a conviction in Fulton County, Jane Jordan, that conviction is not good outside that courthouse because the Georgia Court of Appeals has to review it, and they're not going to ever affirm a conviction on these trumped-up, ridiculous charges.
Do you think they're that conservative?
Yes, I do.
What about the Supreme Court of Georgia?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Because there's some thought that they'd be better off in federal court.
Well, they may be. The jury pool would be drawn from the Northern District of Georgia, which goes all the way to the South Carolina, North Carolina, and Tennessee border, and it would not just include Fulton County. I would rather see them tried in federal court, but for some reason, some of the defendants prefer to stay in Fulton County.
Yeah, they do, and the question is going to be, if one goes, do they all go? And that seems to be the law is, and it's not clear, though. Right. All right, we've got one last segment coming up. I want to turn to the economy, but also support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. Any amount you donate supports our work at the ACLJ, keeps our office in Jerusalem open. And by the way, for those of you that did respond to our law and justice, our drive on life and liberty, boy, thank you. We did better than we thought we would do. Thank you so much. Back with more.
Welcome back to Secular. We're joined by Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, a great friend of ours at the American Center for Law and Justice. Senator Blackburn, I want to jump right into it. We've got Mayor Eric Adams predicting that the migrant crisis could destroy, he used the word destroy, New York City with the back to school starting today. The number of migrant children, I think it's up 20% or 30% who have registered to attend New York City public schools. Maybe it seems like some Democrats outside of Washington are starting to see the light on illegal immigration. But does the border crisis in for the whole country, do you see Democrats really realizing how big of an issue this is in Washington?
Well, they're going to have to admit with this immigration crisis, every town's a border town, every state is a border state. The lesson for some of these big blue cities that declared themselves to be sanctuary cities is that lo and behold, you know, you can't be everything to everybody coming across that southern border in this supposed compassionate approach of being a sanctuary city turns out not to be such a compassionate approach, especially when you look at what is happening to people that are paying the cartels and then making this journey.
You know, it's interesting to me, Senator, and that is in the statement you made that every city now is a border city, every town is a border town, because that's the reality of what's happening. I think about something that we've worked on for decades here at the ACLJ, and that is sex trafficking. We know that the cartels bring in these young women, mostly, some boys too, but mostly young women, through Mexico, and then disperse them along the expressway routes. So it makes every town in the country having to deal with this. You would think that in and of itself would be enough to stop it. We'll get into the terrorism sneaking over the border in a minute, but just that alone would be enough to take definitive action.
One would think that it is. And when you look at the high percentage of women and girls that have been physically, mentally, emotionally, sexually abused by the cartels as they make this trip. And the fact that the cartels are global businesses, last year they brought people from 176 different countries to our southern border for illegal entry into this country. Cartels are big international, global concerns. They are making money. Human trafficking now, it was a $500 million a year business in 2019. It is now a $150 billion with a B. $150 billion a year business.
Now, as Senator, we also have the concern. So we know the traffickers. We know that involves the cartels, the horrible issues, the right to the children, to the women involved in the trafficking, to the migrants involved with these cartels who pay these coyotes and pay this money and then end up in these cities and kind of don't know what to do or who they should rely on. They, of course, then end up relying on city and government services. But also the terror threat that It's been tough for this administration to want to admit, though they've had to a couple of times that we've uncovered here at the ACLJ. And most recently, it was this move that a known someone who had been sympathetic to ISIS had been a smuggler of 120 Uzbek men who ended up claiming asylum and then being let go into the United States. I mean, they've got trial dates. They're supposed to show up at some point in time. But I mean, for goodness sakes, they show up. They've got connections to terrorism. And right now, they're just waltzing around the United States of America.
And well, that's exactly what they are doing. And think about it as this coming to your community, because right now the FBI is trying to find these people that have been let go. These are the ones they know of, but they've got friends and buddies and gang members and acquaintances or terrorist cell cohorts that have come across in the gotaways, the known and unknown gotaways, people that we do not know who they are. And they've assumed another name and identity, and they are walking around, freely walking around this country. And it is of tremendous concern to me when you talk about the safety of our cities and how we're going to protect people. This is of tremendous concern, and it should be of concern to everyone. And it is why I say that southern border is a national security issue. It is where our foreign policy and our domestic policy meet. I want our communities to be safe. I want our children and our families to be safe. I want kids to be able to go to events and not worry about terrorists that are in their community. And we have to secure the southern border. I want parents to know that the flow of fentanyl in this country that is wreaking havoc on families, that is taking precious lives. I want them to know that something is going to be done about it, and that is going to stop being trafficked. I had one of our sheriffs in Tennessee tell me that now they just assume all the drugs they apprehend are laced with fentanyl, whether it's gummy bears or it is marijuana or it is press pills. They assume that there is fentanyl in every bit of it. And as we know, four tiny pieces the size of a grain of sand will kill you.
You know, one of the other, going back to the terrorism issue, we filed a lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security because they had apprehended two Yemeni individuals at the border, and then the Homeland Security got upset when Customs and Border Patrol announced publicly that they had, in fact, apprehended these two terrorists. They were on the terror watch list. They made them take down the posting. There was, we got all this internal communication. I've shared it with members of Congress that you know, don't do this. And the FBI was very upset about this because it was cutting against the narrative of the Biden administration that the national security is not a border issue when clearly it is.
Well, of course it is a national security issue. When, you know, we've talked about the human trafficking and the sex trafficking. We've talked about the cartels being the people that are making money on this and the way they are global organizations. You look at how they have teamed up with China for all of these precursor chemicals to make the fentanyl, and then the cartel is the distributor. And you look at the increase in Chinese that are presenting for illegal entry at the southern border. And you have to say, this is a national security risk. And the cartels are so bold, emboldened because that border is wide open. You know, go talk to any police chief, any sheriff. They will tell you the cartels are active in every state in this country. They have set up hubs that are distributing drugs, that are kind of a spot where the gangs operate out of. You have the labor crews operating out of there. You have the sex trafficking rings operating out of these cartel-held hubs.
Blackburn, we know how important this issue is to you and to the constituents and to not just the people of Tennessee, but to every one of us in the country. As you said, we're all dealing with this battle. Whatever city you live in, whatever state you're in, we're all having to fight this. So I appreciate everything you're doing to bring light to this and to try and get the attention of the other party to make sure they start actually implementing policies to prevent this. It's so important, Dad. I mean, to the entire country.
Absolutely.
It affects every single one of us.
Senator, thanks for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Happy to join you. Thank you.
All right, folks. Let me tell you something. The getting Senator Blackburn's engagement on this is such a critical issue, representing everyone. That's why your support of the work of the ACLJ is so critical. Let me encourage you to go to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. Support the work of the ACLJ.